Hello. I'm currently working on an incredible upcoming interview with my friend and artist, A.D. Russell. And during the course of our talk, I reminded her that on the day we met, she had referenced a fable called Hope for the Flowers to encourage me after I had just moved to a new place, upstate New York. At the time, I had been consumed by anxieties over leaving my life, my friends, and my quote-unquote career behind. The story's theme is a bit like Robert Frost's The Road Not Taken, only starring caterpillars. And it has a lot of applications for being an artist. In our talk, we didn't have enough time to really dive deep into the book's ideas, so I thought I'd make a dedicated episode as a kind of companion piece. Brace yourself for an army of analogies. And yes, in case you're wondering, a group of caterpillars is called an army. You are listening to Pep Talks for Artists, a podcast offering small words of encouragement to all those shuffling along the artist's road. I'm your host, Amy Toledo. In this episode, I'm going to talk about a book. The book is called Hope for the Flowers, and its tagline is a tale partly about life, partly about revolution, and lots about hope for adults and others. It's an allegorical fable from 1972. It's bright yellow, full of drawings of caterpillars, and was written and illustrated by Trina Paulus. It's a book rooted in the idealism of the counterculture movement of the 1960s, and it's an excellent analogy for going your own way as an artist. The story follows two caterpillars named Yellow and Stripe, who decide to stop climbing and dare to risk the butterfly. Put a pin in this, because more details will be revealed later on in the episode. So you may be wondering why I'm doing an episode about this random book about cartoon caterpillars from the 70s. And good question. Well, one, caterpillars have been on my mind a lot lately, because where I live in upstate New York, there is a huge gypsy moth caterpillar infestation, and they are gobbling up every leaf. So much so that the trees look like winter, like completely barren. But, I've observed, those caterpillars that don't find a tree to climb will climb literally anything. The house, my studio building, even a barbecue grill. They also have these threads that they use to move up and down. So, like, by just opening my back door, I'm confronted with a row of hundreds of hanging ones, like a beaded curtain from the 70s, that has to be pushed aside to proceed. It's terrible, it's gross, and it's overwhelming. But aside from being appalled at the devastation an invasive species can wreak, every time I see a caterpillar climbing futilely up a non-leaf-bearing object, I think of this fable because the subject of climbing futilely is a main caution in it. I first heard of it 12 years or so ago when I moved from Brooklyn to upstate New York. It was one of the scariest things I'd ever done because I had struggled so hard to succeed in that place. And it was part of my goal. Moving felt like giving up and committing career suicide. Grad school professors warned that it wasn't wise. And truth be told, it felt like reneging on a contract. The contract I had made with all the other struggling aspiring artists of the city that were serious. And serious meant living there and not here. AKA north of there. But shortly after I moved, I met two other city expat artists for lunch. Shout out to A.D. and to our mutual friend, Heej Kim. I was so nervous because I had amped myself up on pre-game cappuccinos and was pretty much a manic chatterer. But nevertheless, they took this displaced city pigeon under their wild crow wings, and Adie offered reassurance in the form of this allegory. It's okay. You've only just left the caterpillar pillar. And now you're risking the butterfly. And of course, as these kind of profound moments go, one person is shook for life, and the other has absolutely no memory of the event.
I know I must have told you because nobody else on Earth really knows what that book is, but I have no recollection of that conversation.
Okay. It was burned deeply into my mind as a way of seeing our choices as artists and how sometimes going against the grain is brave. And not only brave, but the best way forward. Okay, so you're probably wondering, so what exactly is the story? We open upon two caterpillars. One is yellow and is named Yellow. And the other one is black and white striped and is named, you guessed it, Stripe. And the thing to do in their caterpillar world, it seems, as in real life, is to climb. But they don't climb up trees. Instead, they climb up these caterpillar pillars, which are columns of writhing caterpillar bodies, all also climbing and trying to reach the top. A top that is so high, it disappears into the clouds, obscured from view. Not gonna lie, it gets cutthroat on the way up, with backstabby caterpillar saboteurs flicking and kicking each other off, or trampling their brethren without a wisp of remorse. And eventually, Yellow and Stripe split up. Yellow bails, and Stripe continues on. Only to find, spoiler alert, nothing. That's right, nothing. And worse than that, from the top, Stripe can see thousands of other caterpillar pillars as far as the eye can see, all also with nothing at the top. Meanwhile, Yellow has gone and done something radical and crazy. She's decided to spin a cocoon and risk for a butterfly. Quote, imagine, I didn't even know I could do this. That's some encouragement that I'm on the right track. If I have inside me the stuff to make cocoons, maybe the stuff of butterflies is there too. End quote. And side note, did you know that when caterpillars metamorphose, they don't just grow wings on their normal bodies and then pop out. They actually disintegrate into a goop first. And then, and only then, do they fully form into a butterfly from that teaspoon of primordial soup. Truly amazing. But anyway, back to Yellow and Stripe. What does Yellow mean when she says, risk the butterfly? She explains, quote, you must want to fly so much that you are willing to give up being a caterpillar. And she's really nervous about the whole cocoon thing. The author writes, how could she risk the only life she knew when it seemed so unlikely she would ever be a glorious winged creature? And the author continues, what did she have to go on? She had seen another caterpillar who believed enough to make his own cocoon. And she also had that peculiar hope which had kept her off the pillar and leapt within her when she heard about butterflies. Okay, but fast forwarding along, we have success. She does emerge as a butterfly after she builds her cocoon and flies up to the pillar to find her friend and let him know about the whole business of risking the bee. Stripe is, as you might expect, gobsmacked and begins to climb down, telling everyone, quote, we can fly. We can become butterflies. There's nothing at the top and it doesn't matter. He had followed his instinct to get high. These are her words. It's the 60s, the counterculture, etc. But now he realized that in order to get there, to the top, he had to fly and not climb. The caterpillars on the pillar receiving this news were dubious, to say the least, and were too afraid to veer from the usual course and admit to themselves all the climbing may have been for naught. Stripe eventually gets down and makes his own cocoon. Quote, "It got darker and darker, and he was afraid. He felt he had to let go of everything," end quote. But then he emerges from his chrysalis as a black and white butterfly. Ta-da! And by the way, this emergence, in butterfly scientific parlance, is called eclosion. E-C-L-O-S-I-O-N. I looked it up and I wanted to share it with you, and you're welcome. But back to the story. Then the two butterflies find each other at last, and they flit and flutter about amongst the flowers, as you'd expect. And the last illustration shows one of the pillars dissolving as caterpillars begin to follow Stripe down, heading for their own cocoon making. Then, the end. So, to artists, what does risking the butterfly mean? Like, what does it mean for us? I think first, the book's message is that it's okay to go against the grain, against the herd, and it's okay to spend time in a cocoon sometimes, developing and considering your own path. This new unique path may take you out of a city center, like me, or it may take you into parenthood or non-parenthood. It may mean going slow when everyone else seems to be going fast, or making work that's unapologetically off-trend. There's a freedom in choosing the path less traveled by. And Yellow shows us how to support each other when we feel the call to go our own way. She is our anti-Eve, offering an apple, but not full of evil, full of courage, to make an artist's life of our own choosing. Let's take the examples of Agnes Martin, Georgia O'Keeffe, Marston Hartley, Lee Bontecou, Fairfield Porter, Charles Birchfield, Romare Bearden, Alice Neal, Gustin, Shirley Jaffe, and Lois Dodd, to name a few. They all split off from popular trends, movements, or from art world centers, and stayed true to who they were, fluttering and flapping their way to greatness in their own iconic ways. Martin, O'Keeffe, and Hartley hit the desert at times. Neal and Bearden maintained their Harlem seats. Porter, Hartley, and Gustin left for wild nature in Maine and Woodstock, respectively. Birchfield bunkered down in frosty Buffalo, painting landscapes during the Abex movement. Bontecou escaped to a Pennsylvania farm. Dodd clung hard to her observational painting virtuosity in a world gone gaga for abstraction. And Jaffe cloistered with a group of American painters in Paris when everyone who was anyone was in New York. They risked the V, and they were all iconoclasts. And what is the dictionary definition of an iconoclast? I looked it up. It's a person who attacks settled beliefs or institutions. A person who goes against the crowd, trends, and expectations. A person who takes the unusual path. Trina Paulus's fable shows us that it's natural for us to all long for something more, and that that unsettled feeling can be a catalyst to set us into motion. It behooves us, though, to question that motion. Are we brave enough to go our own way, to journey to a new place or to new ideas and directions in our own work? Do we have faith in our inner butterfly goo and the transformative power of it to see us safely through our own metamorphoses? As a closing thought, I'll leave you with a word from iconoclast Agnes Martin. Quote, "Of all the pitfalls in our paths and the tremendous delays and wanderings off the track, I want to say that they are not what they seem to be. I want to say that all that seems like fantastic mistakes, all that seems like error, is not error. And it all has to be done. That which seems like a false step is the next step." End quote. Happy pupating. See you on the flip side. You've been listening to Pep Talks for Artists. If you'd like to check out the Instagram, please find me at Pep Talks for Artists. I always post photos that go with each episode there, including this one, because who doesn't love a visual aid? I'm also looking for contributors for a future episode. If you're up for it, leave me a short message at speakpipe.com/peps about what you both like and dislike about New York City. I'm hoping to flesh out an episode about Marston Hartley with them, and I'll also put a link in the show description. Contributors will also receive a zine made by yours truly called The Stormwich Roots, Quotes of Artistic Pessimism, featuring Marston Hartley. Well, that's all my business for today. As always, I really appreciate you stopping by, and I'll see you next time.